Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lengwin, hoping you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you experience when you share God's love with others. As we do each week, I'd like to begin a program with a story that is based on faith and form with imagination. With a groan, an old man sat down next to Jesus and said, "Now I would like to ask you my question. How can we find our Creator within us? I know He is everywhere. I've heard you teach that our Creator can be found in the water, which He has given us to drink, and that He has given His love to the trees, which provide us with fruit, to the earth, which provides us with grain, to the air we breathe, and to the rain which falls from the sky to water our plants and satisfy our thirst. I must ask you again, how can we find our Creator within us? How can He speak to us from within our heart to our mind?" Jesus sighed and answered, "You have repeated what I have taught so often, the many ways in which our Creator shows us His love. Each man, woman, and child has the Creator within each of them. He knows our inner thoughts, and His love for us will never end. We, however, must open the door to receive that love. Speak to Him through our heart, mind, and He will speak back to us, not through the voice you use with your brothers with whom you sit, but with a voice that is private and pure, and you will hear His voice in return." The men who had come to question Jesus looked at one another, and one of them began to laugh and then asked, "If the Heavenly Father is so powerful and wonderful and can create the trees, the water, the earth, and the sky, why can't He just speak to us directly?" Jesus sighed again, and there seemed to be a hint of anger in His eyes, which quickly passed. And He said, my friend, how can you deny His love? Are you not a father?" The man nodded that he was. "When you saw your child for the first time, was there not love in your heart? Did you not teach out to your child? When your child cried for the first time, you did not understand why, did you?" The man quickly responded, "But I heard it with my ears." Jesus continued, "And you felt it in your heart." Our Creator's life and love is a gift to each and every one of us. He knows us well because He created us. Out of love, He gave us a soul. Out of love, He created the earth. Speak to Him and He will speak back to you. You will feel it in your very bones. Another man said, "Master, I don't doubt what you say, but I still have a question. If one does not feel the Creator's love, does that mean he has abandoned us?" Jesus shook his head and answered, "No, no. Perhaps it was not the time for you to hear him. Do not give up. Continue to pray to him, to love him, and to thank him, because even from his most minute gift, you will feel the true joy and happiness that can only be given by him, our Creator." Our guest this evening writes in part in the introduction to her book titled John of the Cross for Today, The Dark Night, which is a companion to another book titled John of the Cross for Today, The Ascent. In a society that would confine the life of the spirit to occasional practices of private piety, one might wonder what a mystic and spiritual master like St. John has to say to the masses. It is a challenge to reconstruct in contemporary language while remaining faithful to the parlance of his classic. It's timely and timeless counsels to sincere seekers. St. John's probing analysis of our dark nights has to appeal as much to Carmelites in monasteries as to laity in the marketplace. It is to the foundational, formative themes of the text that we must return. We have to dive deep. We dare not stay on the surface because we need to know what this great guide teaches more in our era than perhaps in any previous age. The dark night is no longer a metaphor we can take or leave, a quaint symbol or the title of an old book. It is our unique and universal reality. It is a description of our world, our neighborhood, our family life. It is about pain and loneliness, anxiety and grief. It is out of this social and personal experience of the dark night that we can once again be enlightened by the writings of St. John of the Cross. The dark night is not distant from us. It is as near as our own backyard. The child with no place to call home. The bored teenager tempted to take drugs. The parent with a list of 1,000 things to do and no time to relax are living in the nights of suffering. Only God knows. We all journey into the night in one way or another. We all seek the guidance St. John has to offer us today. The author of this, of course, is Dr. Susan Mudo, who has been one of our frequent and favorite guests for a long time now. It was since 1983. She's a renowned speaker, author, teacher, executive director of the Epiphany Association, dean of the Epiphany Academy of Formative Spirituality, an expert in literature and spirituality. And she continues to teach courses on an adjunct basis at a number of schools, seminaries, and centers of higher learning. She's a frequent contributor to scholarly and popular journals and lectures and leads conferences, seminars, workshops, and institutes nationally and internationally. Her awards are many, including a Doctor of Humanities degree. Tonight, it's timely, tonight, she's going to help us understand the relevance of the teaching of John of the Cross for today. Dr. Susan Mudo, welcome back to Amplify.
Well, thank you so much, Father Ron, and I'm quite touched by your beautiful introduction. I really look forward to the evening and to serving our listeners.
This is sort of timely. Tell us about what is the dark night, the title given to the book we are going to discuss this evening, and you write that it's no ordinary night, and from what I read from the book already, there's a sense in which is about to happen in our country, in Florida, hit with maybe the worst hurricane ever, is in its own way, quote unquote, a dark night or time, isn't it?
Yes, the beauty of this phrase, the dark night, is that it applies to so many situations. And I think St. John had a heart for helping us. A dark night can be an ordinary visit in a doctor's office that suddenly turns into the diagnosis of a terminal illness. And it's just everything that we counted on is stripped away. A dark night can be an emotional turmoil caused, for example, by the death of someone on whom we depended. A dark night can be a time of pondering truths that we thought we understood, but suddenly they seem more difficult to us. Like, for example, in your opening story, how can I hear God if God doesn't speak, let us say, with a megaphone? So St. John pondered this metaphor in order to help us understand our human condition, which we'll always have about it, an unknown factor. We cannot control everything, and God knows that as hard as we try, we fail. But he wanted us to see that in the midnight moments of life, when we really have not much to cling to but faith, paradoxically, that is when God, the God who loves us and sustains us, is most near.
Yes. And who was John of the Cross? Who was St. John of the Cross?
St. John of the Cross is a remarkable soul. He lived from 1542 to 1591. He is from Spain. He was very much engaged in higher education at the University of Salamanca, became ordained as a priest in the order of the Discalced Carmelites. And then, thanks be to the grace of God, he met St. Teresa of Avila, a few years older than him, almost 24 years older to be exact. But she had already begun to reform the Carmelite order in the realm of what she called the Order of Discalced Carmelites. That really is a word, discalced. It means wear sandals, not finely tooled boots. And St. John had a knack for poverty of spirit and just living in a quiet, hidden way. And when he met St. Teresa, he realized that he would be the first friar of the Reformed Carmelites. But he was also a brilliant poet and a wonderful ascetical, mystical theologian. So the church owes a great deal to St. John of the Cross. And personally, in my work and the work of Father Adrian von Kalm, we feel that St. John is to formation theology, ascetical, mystical theology, what someone like Thomas Aquinas would be to doctrinal, systematic theology. So he is a great doctor of the church, a saint, and a humble human being who really loved people and wanted to help them grow closer to God.
I'm probably not going to be successful. It's a book. It's about 300 pages long. It's 20 chapters, but I was amazed. I thought I had read it, and I hadn't, but I had it on my shelf, I guess, because of the other companion book that you wrote, St. John of the Cross, The Ascent. So what I'd like to be able to do is maybe touch on as many of the chapters as I can and just tell you some of the main points that I pulled out and let you then decide what it is you would like to say at that point. Without having to answer everything that I raise. Is that all right?
Yes, wonderful. And thank you for finally reading this companion
yes.
to The Ascent Dark Night.
Right. So in the first chapter, you talk about we can be moved to capture something of the incomprehensibility of the sacred, and that without wonder, we would not be distinctively human, that God's care for us is unconditional, and it doesn't really depend on our being perfect or sinless. In fact, such love, you write, and again, you've written the commentary of what he has written, such love is too wonderful for words, and the miracle for which one searches tirelessly is a true mystical union between us and God. Say something about that true mystical union between us and God or any of the other points that I raised.
Well, I think the best way to address that is to just cite two stanzas from the poem that St. John commented on, a poem that was written at a difficult time in his life when he was imprisoned by his own brothers in the monastery of Toledo because they weren't very happy that he had joined St. John of the Cross. And the first stanza really says it all. One dark night, fired with love's urgent longings, ah, the sheer grace, I went out unseen, my house being now all stilled. It's a night of suffering that we all understand, but what is extraordinarily important is that this very night fires the soul with love's urgent longings, a mystical longing for companionship with the Lord. And the paradox a few stanzas later is captured in these words of the poem, O guiding night, O night more lovely than the dawn, O night that has united the lover with his beloved, transforming the beloved in her very lover. So this is the essence of what St. John wants to teach. The dark night is an opening to an urgent longing to be united with God, and the paradox is that it's in this very night that union with the beloved becomes not only a possibility, but a graced reality.
In chapter 2, the imperfections of beginners that are on pages 28 to 36, I think it's on page 30 that you write, there is no other way to journey to God than by passing through the dark night of faith. If you can amplify on that a little bit.
Well, I said a moment ago a teaching from St. John of the Cross, which I personally have never forgotten from when I first became fascinated with his writings. And that was this understanding that it's in the midnight moments of life, the only proximate means to union with God, this is his phrase, is naked faith. Mm. I believe that you're there, my love, my God. I believe that you are with me, even though I do not see, even though I do not understand. This is such an act of courage, and it seems to me to be a key to mature faith. This is not the baby faith of when I ask for something, I receive it. No, this is believing, even at a time when I can't quite understand God's ways with me.
And in chapter two also, you're right, we feel torn between the fear of a life lived without nearness to God and the fascination of what it might mean to pass through the dark night and be transformed, and that growth at this level of spiritual maturing is not our doing, it's due to the power of grace. And St. John names the world, the flesh, and the devil as the three enemies with which we're probably familiar with. But he says there's no other way to journey to God than by passing through the dark night. What about this chapter would you like to share with us?
Well, you see, it's brilliant of this great spiritual guide that he begins his pilgrimage to ultimate union with God by taking into account who we are. We are not perfect. We are often caught up in the terrible illusions of self-sufficiency. I can do it alone. I don't need God. I mean, our whole culture at the moment is living in that illusion, as if God can be put to the sidelines. And St. John says this is the classic imperfection of anyone beginning this journey to God and hoping to come to more spiritual maturity. And so he has to help us understand what it is that poses obstacles on the path. And the biggest obstacle is us. We're the obstacle, not God. God loves us unconditionally. God wants to be united with us. but we swing off in our own pride-filled direction. And so it's almost like St. John holds up a mirror and says, take a good look at yourself. What is it that accounts for your deepest feeling of emptiness? Why is it that all the power and possession and pleasure in the world cannot fill that hole, H-O-L-E, that hole in your heart that belongs only to God?
Okay. We need to take our first break, and then we'll be back to continue our discussion about St. John of the Cross. Welcome back to Amplify with our guest, Dr. Susan Muto. We're talking about her book, St. John of the Cross, for today, The Dark Night. And it's a companion volume to St. John of the Cross for today, The Ascent. Well, I've blown the way I wanted to conduct this interview. I've gone through, I've touched upon two chapters of 20. So that's just not going to work. So I'm going to cut down my talk, Susan, and just bring a point up in each of the chapters. And if you want to mention it, something further, amplify on that, or talk about that particular chapter, we're going to talk about the prison of pride. And again, it's part of the fact that's how I was overwhelmed with this book. When I said it was spiritually rich, spiritually inspiring, spiritually enlightening, and can be life-changing, I really meant it. And I just can't get a lot of stuff out of my head. So the one question I want to ask here is spiritual pride. You indicate that it's an aberration to some beginners who might be prone to it. What is spiritual pride? And you talk about it on page 37.
Spiritual pride is, it comes down to one thing, and it comes down to the same thing over and over again. At the center of my field of life is me, my, and mine. How I look, how I appear, if I'm successful, if I say the right thing, if I avoid any kind of conflict because I want to look good. What that means when me, my, and mine are at the center of my life is that the mystery, the Christ form of my soul, is wedged out to the periphery. And I do not understand that without God I can do nothing. So really, we could also say the poison of pride from the very early legend in the Garden of Genesis. We would be gods. It was not enough for us to be made in the form and likeness of God. So this chapter really draws us, if we have the courage to go there, to self-examination. For instance, I have a whole series of self-examining questions on pages 42 and 43, such as, do I consciously or unconsciously tend to minimize my faults, often because I want to look good in the eyes of others? As a result, do I become impatient with myself? It's like I want to be holy in a day. But this is a long story to come to spiritual maturity. So I really think that this chapter sets St. John on the track of examining with us with great care. Mm-hmm. What is it that blocks our union with God? And he wants us to not be dishonest about that. And so he talks about how pride, vainglory, vanity can be a prison that holds me back from union with God. And that's really why he says we must shift to Jesus in this. And when we shift to Jesus, where do we go? We go to humility.
Yes.
He humbled himself and became one of us in all things but sin. My goodness. If the second person of the Blessed Trinity can humble himself, what's wrong with me that I keep myself at the center rather than Jesus?
Chapter 4 is the triple trap of avarice, lust, and anger. On pages, there's a section in this chapter, between pages 54 and 60, talking about what is spiritual lust and from what can it arise?
Well, you see, St. John starts the first book of the two books of the Dark Night by heading into the imperfections that we need to face and get past. And those imperfections are very much paralleled by the seven capital sins. Obviously, this is just part of the basic teaching of the church. And avarice, greed replaces generosity. Spiritual lust, almost he says we lust for constant consolations and we want to feel good. We want to have a feel-good spiritual life. He's talking about spiritual imperfections, not just about psychological imperfections. You know, we are irascible, we are angry. I found it absolutely brilliant that he took the seven capital sins and moved them into the realm of spirituality, so that really I become greedy about my experiences of a nearness to God. I want to keep bragging about them. I become lustful in my quest for special moments that make me feel holier than other people. And also I get angry, you know, when maybe I'm not given the recognition that I should have. So he talks about, we probably never think about this, but it's amazing, lustful addictions to spiritual feelings, almost like a devotionalism and pietism become more important than the God that I'm supposed to worship. So that's the imperfections that represent this triple trap that I write about in this chapter.
Chapter 5 is debilitation obstacles of spiritual gluttony, envy, and sloth. And the one that point that really I'm attracted to is on page 82, where you write that the paradox of the cross is understandably uppermost in St. John's mind. It is the underlying theme of his entire book. So say a little bit to us, if you can, about the paradox of the cross.
Well, I think we have to really appreciate the fact that when he entered the Reformed Carmelite community to join St. Teresa of Avila in helping people who really were serious about the spiritual life, he chose as his name in religion Juan de la Cruz, John of the Cross. And St. John really saw in the cross, first and foremost, that love that pure, that unconditional, was the only force strong enough to drive out evil. Indeed, to drive out evils like spiritual gluttony, collecting all kinds of experiences. It's like sometimes a person becomes almost seeking out retreat after retreat. One is never enough. And only that kind of love could have overcome the dreadful obstacle of really being envious of others who are closer to God than I seem to be, or sheer laziness, sloth, to not want to go the hard road, run the race to the finish. So the cross was, for St. John, not just an instrument of Roman torture. It was an exquisite, overwhelming example that love that pure alone can cast out the evil of these imperfections that are so harmful to ourselves personally and communally. So his love for the cross was real and genuine. But he also saw that the cross was the beginning of a story that would culminate in really that glad night where the lover and the beloved are united, just as the disciples were united with Jesus on the road to Emmaus. So all of this is St. John's great love for the whole story of Christianity. But certainly the cross, without the cross, there can be no Easter morn.
Chapter 6 is letting God do the leading, a number of points here. The one question that among many that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 designated, but the one I'm going to ask is, what do we have to do to feel the nearness of God?
The reason I chose this phrase to highlight the chapter, letting God do the leading, is because I wanted to emphasize the centrality of the divine initiative, that it's not just what we do. It's what we allow God to do for us and through us. And St. John had a keen sense that the initiative for this journey belongs to God. It is us who follow. It is Jesus through the power of the Holy Spirit that leads. And you can see embedded in that mystical understanding is great humility. It's letting go of any illusion that I'm in charge. And it's really recognizing something totally different. I think St. John had a keen sense of an intimate love relationship, a person-to-person love relationship between the soul and God. And the key to it all is to quiet down our own pushiness. You know, Father Adrian had a great phrase. He said, if we push against the pace of grace, we will lose our peace. I think St. John would have loved that. No pushing, no impatience. Wait upon the Lord. We cannot force the midnight to become dawn. We have to wait in the midnight moment where we are deeply loved by God for the dawning of the new day.
Chapter 7 is proper dispositions for the journey into darkness. And the one that I'm citing among 8 points I'm jumping over to 8. But the one that I would want to ask is on pages 110 and 112, talk about sanctity. How can sanctity be attained? Do we really know what it is, and what would motivate us to want to do that?
Well, just a few pages before that, on page 110, what is sanctity? I think that it's very much related to these 3 points that come through in this part of the Dark Night. To live a holy life, 1, be content simply to abide in loving and peaceful attentiveness to God. For St. John of the Cross, contemplative prayer is abiding in loving attentiveness with the one who loves us. Secondly, a holy life is in many ways to live without concern, that is to say, without useless worry. He would often say to the sisters that he was counseling, please, relax, dear sisters. Give up your fretful efforts to be holy in a day. Let Jesus be your all in all. And then thirdly, from the point of view of sanctity, taste and savor the goodness of divine love. Just as the psalm says, taste and savor the goodness of the Lord. And again, here's the point that I made earlier. Recall that the initiative for union belongs solely to God. We are the receivers. God is the giver. And then, of course, on page 12, there are several points that we can really appreciate as we try to grow into holiness. And I think one that's very significant, again, accept that this call to holiness is a gift, receive it peacefully and with gratitude, and allow the Holy Spirit to widen the space for grace that is already in our hearts.
Chapter 8 is the blessings, darkness bestowed. And the point, among others, that I have highlighted is suffering, whatever else it may be about, is a great teacher, on page 124.
Well, here again, St. John does something marvelous in this book. After going through all the imperfections of beginners and being very open about the dark nights in all of our lives, he starts to lay out the blessings that accompany these moments of affliction. And he really and truly understands that the limits of life can become openings to deeper love. I use a little phrase, perhaps a cliche, no pain, no gain. And St. John, I think, would have been very happy with that, because he understood that the way we imitate Christ is not just to be on the mountaintop when the 5,000 are being fed, but having the courage to walk with him on the road to Golgotha to the site of his great sacrifice. So the blessings of the night are also backed up by many, many different spiritual writers. I mean, I quote people like from Corrie ten Boom in the Ravensbrück concentration camp to Mother Teresa of Calcutta. All of them saw somehow this great mystery that in the nights of suffering, there is great joy, that we find ourselves never alone, but very much open to the deepest consolation that Christ can give. So I think that's very important, that St. John opens up in the midst of this search for the meaning of darkness, how blessed is the illumination that comes when we enter into the meaning of Christ's sacrifice for our sake.
And chapter 9 is moving into the night of the Spirit, and I have selected a number of short passages, beginning on page 148. Who of us has not learned something of lasting value from being led by the mystery, capital M, the mystery, to a place we would not have chosen to go? A little later, faith tells us that God allows us to experience these interior trials for a reason. When we are at our most ineffective, humanly speaking, grace works efficaciously to lead us to a previously unknown level of spiritual maturity. On page 151, God adapts the pace of grace to our capacity to receive it. None of us can be the same when we are touched even briefly by the finger of God. And then finally on page 152, nothing God does is done in vain. We cannot hope to follow Christ unless we are willing to take up the cross. So can God ever take over totally as our guide is something that you write about on page 145.
Well, once again, this brings us to the exquisite spiritual director that St. John was. This book came out of his desire to give direction to the nuns who wanted him to explain his own poem. And he saw, as I think we see, when we have an heart-to-heart talk with someone who's gone through something very difficult, we say to them, would you rather that hadn't happened to you? And 9 times out of 10, they'll say no, because painful as that experience was, it taught me more about myself and God than I could have ever known otherwise. St. John is a firm believer that though trials and tribulations test our faith, they help us to grow wiser. They help us to have more compassion for others' suffering. These experiences are important, and the beauty of his writing is that it comes out of deep experience. He experienced exactly what he's writing about. I mean, for 9 months, he was kept a prisoner in his own community in a little room the size of a broom closet. He was beaten. He was starved. He was denied even his divine office book. He was not kept clean, and he was a very fastidious person. He was like short. He was 4'8", but he was a giant of spiritual wisdom.
Yes.
And it was in that experience that he came to find his poetic voice. Where have you? And I quote from the Spiritual Canticle, which was the first poem of the 4 or 5 that he wrote from the prison experience. Where have you hidden, beloved, and left me moaning? You fled like the stag after wounding me. I went out calling you, but you were gone. Now, who could not identify with that moment in a time of real crisis when we feel alone? Where have you hidden, beloved? But it's in that relationship, again, of intimacy, that the beloved comes to the soul in a whole new way. And that's what it means to enter the dark night, which we do in chapter 10.
Yes, entering the spiritual night. And I'm reading from page 159. The only legitimate point of access to oneness with God is faith, not feelings. Faith is the best defense we can muster to ward off demonic manipulation. The closer one comes to liberation in God through love, the more one has to guard against the temptation to be the object of other people's attention. I could read on, but that's what I highlighted.
Yes, of course. And there you see that St. John has consistency in his great capacity to teach us, because embedded in those phrases is the great enemies, the three that were mentioned earlier, the world and its worldliness that is only about power and possession, the flesh that only seeks instant gratification and is loath to make any sacrifices, and now, of course, the greatest evil of all, and that's the demonic. That is almost this satanic manipulation that basically comes down to the fact that we don't really have to bother about godly things. We can make it on our own. And it's in confronting those enemies of the soul that St. John says that we need to come to that experience of kind of naked faith at the midnight moment, which the demonic, the great seducer and the great manipulator, doesn't understand and cannot penetrate. So therefore, the paradox that comes out over and over in his writings is renunciation. Renunciation, basically, of the stupidity that we can live without God is the only ultimate key to liberation. And faith is that proximate means to union with God. He says we need to purify our understanding by faith, we need to purify our memory by hope, and we need to purify our will by love.
I may end up reading us out to our next break, but reading from on pages 166 to 167, the forecast of the night of the Spirit, you write that St. John lays out, as does an architect, the blueprints for a building, what one can expect in the spiritual night. The first is divestment, second is apparent abandonment, the third is privation, the fourth is dark contemplation, where you write, this remarkable transformation, this shift from one inadequate form of life to another level of distinct inhumanness is not something we can do. It is a gift granted to us by God by means of a pure and dark contemplation. It is an opening to God that transcends the initiatory night of the senses and leads one to the proficient and potentially perfect night of the Spirit. This night, says St. John, quote, is the principal purification of the soul, close quote. Now, he can explain again, and in the full meaning of his opening stanza, one dark night, fired with love's urgent longings, the sheer grace, I went out unseen, my house now all being stilled. So we just have 30 seconds, so there's not much more that we can comment on here. Unless after we come back after the break, you'd like to say something more about that. And at least this is working. There's like when you get so excited about a book, you want to be able to share it all with people. And that's what happened when I was outlining this book. So we're going to.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest is Dr. Susan Muto. We're talking about her book, John of the Cross for Today, The Dark Knight. It's a companion to St. John of the Cross for Today, The Ascent. Both books are still on my shelves, and I can assure you they're going to remain there because I was so inspired by these. I don't know if it was the right moment or whatever, but I really felt blessed in reading them at the particular time that I did. And the books sat there for a while. It must have been the time. So we're going to try to touch on the last 10 chapters as we did during the first. Go ahead, you want to say something.
I was just going to say, dear, that to get those books on the shelves of our listeners, if they're interested, they can call to order them at 412-341-7494. That's the offices of our Epiphany Institute, and the books have been kept happily in print. In fact, The Dark Knight itself, the book we're pondering, has been translated into Spanish. But 412-341-7494, our office would be happy to take a book order for this one and its previous book, John of the Cross Today, The Ascent. I also wanted to say that at the end of our previous segment, we culminated with the reading of the first stanza of the Dark Knight poem. But I'd like, as we move toward the rest of the book, to read the second stanza, because the rest of the book is really rooted in St. John's commentary on this second stanza of his poem. In darkness and secure, by the secret ladder disguised, ah, the sheer grace, in darkness and concealment, my house being now all stilled. My house being now all stilled ended the first stanza, ended the second stanza, because the house that he's referring to is us. We are the house of God. And that stillness is important, especially in the midnight moments. And what is stilled? Well, in the chapter 11, what is stilled as the night descends is, first of all, our intellect, our quest for knowledge. I mean, even in our world, we have artificial intelligence, which is totally mechanic. And St. John says that what has to be stilled is our ability to think and reason away from God, that we have to come to a higher plane of purifying our intellect by faith. Our house is stilled when we allow our will to be transformed and purified by love. rather than just by manipulating everything willfully that we can lay our hands on. And we also have to appreciate that our memory, great gifts of distinctive humanness, needs to sweep itself clean, I say, on page 171, of what clutters us, rote responses, ancient wounds, empty images, exhausting expectations, failed illusions, pathetic presumptions, resentful regrets, vapid apologies, sorry trysts, and endless distractions. All of that has to come at last to rest if we're going to really appreciate the way in which our memory is purified by hope, just as our will is purified by love and our intellect by faith.
Two of the things I've highlighted among many are, when all one sees is darkness, all one can do is cling to pure faith. And again, these are your words. Mm-hmm. And also, yes, the night of the spirit is like a room full of mirrors in which we cannot bear to see ourselves as we really are. Chapter 12 is titled Other Afflictions of the Night. And on page 194, you write about a richly blessed poverty. One knows from long, often excruciating experience that nothing but God can satisfy our heart. This was the conclusion reached by St. Teresa of Avila and her quoted prayer. A lot of people will remember this: let nothing disturb you, nothing affright you. All things pass. God never changes. Patience obtains everything. One who has God lacks nothing. God alone suffices, doesn't he?
Yes, and that's why the afflictions of the night, there's a beautiful poem by English author, George Herbert. He says, affliction shall advance the flight in me. And that's what St. John is talking to us about. Affliction is not paralyzing. Affliction advances our flight to God. Yes, we might feel, as my subheads of that chapter indicate, we might feel undone, we might feel rejected, we might feel forsaken, but all of that leads us to a deeper feeling of utter dependence on God. And of course, Teresa of Avila says that so well: God alone is enough, God alone suffices. So once again, though these nights test us, they lead us to the deepest possible faith and hope and love, really exercising at a high level the gifts of the Spirit that are already ours in baptism, but that we so easily ignore as life goes on. So St. John wants us to recognize that indeed affliction advances our flight to God.
Chapter 13 is Paradoxical Reality, the Darkness that is the Light. And on pages 208 to 211, you have a summary of the purgative process. If you'd like to comment on that or some other part of that chapter.
Well, I'm glad that you went to that part of the book, because I think that the paradoxical reality really is captured in those points that we try to articulate. In other words, the purgative process, as we say, is really a great gift that prepares us for transformation. Transformation in Christ, that we are changed already in this life as an anticipation of the ultimate change in the life to come. That purification may also be exterior, insofar as we suffer and we wonder what the meaning of that suffering is, but it's been revealed to us that that suffering is simply an identification with the highest suffering of love that was given to us on the cross. But really, that suffering terminates at the foot of the cross and really opens us to get cleansed of deformative dispositions and bad habits and everything that really stood in the way of this renewed enkindling with love. And that's what St. John cares a great deal about. I mean, that this glad night becomes paradoxically the very night that unites the lover and the beloved, so that we are at one and the same time conscious of our nothingness, but it's no thingness. Nothing but God mm-hmm. can ultimately satisfy us.
Chapter 14, The Passion of Divine Love, tracing the transformative effects of contemplative purgation. And a couple of points you make is the fire of love is at once painful and purifying. The love with which we love God and God loves us is so passionate and intense that mystics like St. John compare it to the experience of humanly falling in love. And that's a quote from page 213. And then on page 215, you write, at times we find ourselves surrounded again by darkness and plagued by doubt. We know that God will never withdraw his love from us, but because we feel so few consolations, it seems as if we shall never cross over to the promised land or enjoy its milk and honey. What would you like to say about this chapter?
Well, and the truth of the matter is, while it may feel as if we're never going to enjoy that union with God, that flowing metaphor of milk and honey, we are already somehow, somewhere enjoying it. We're enjoying it whether we know it or not, because our spiritual life has gone way beyond sleepy routine, and we are aware of a hunger in us for God. We have that urgent longing that he talks about so beautifully. And really, that longing keeps us alive in a whole new way. It takes away complacency and a kind of couch potato Christianity where we hang around and we just don't understand that we have to respond to God's call to go forward, always forward, into this night that is the night that unites the lover and the beloved. And so it's in that experience that I think St. John is trying to help us appreciate that the darkness paradoxically becomes the light. The dark night becomes the light that illumines our life and brings us closer to God.
And chapter 15 is stillness and security. Only divine darkness can dispense. And one point you make is, through suffering one grows wise. We are our own worst enemies. And then you have a list of the signs of dark contemplation on pages 240 to 246, kind of a summary. There's a whole lot that you've written there so beautifully.
Well, I really, interestingly enough, I was rereading my book, of course, in preparation for this evening, and I actually put a marker on those two pages. I said, I hope that we get to them, because I think that they capture something so profoundly important about St. John's teaching. The first sign of dark contemplation, and dark contemplation simply means the mystery that I can never penetrate, and yet I know is uniting me in a loving and a way that I hardly deserve. And a sign of that is God guides us when we can no longer see. It's like a blindness that is nonetheless a seeing. So God guides us so we don't get always what's happening, we don't understand. But it's almost like that childlike trust. He takes our hand and he leads us to a whole new understanding of what it is to be a follower of Jesus. And then I write another sign. God encourages us to befriend the unknown instead of being afraid. Jesus says so often, be not afraid. Don't be afraid to enter into this unknown land of deeper prayer, deeper contemplation, a quiet, peaceful union with God. We may feel lost, amazing grace, but we really have been found. And other signs, I think, are there. God turns the obstacle of suffering into a formation opportunity. I think that's been an undercurrent of the companion text, that the obstacle, for instance, the suffering of the midnight moment, it's really a great opportunity to grow. Mm-hmm. And therefore, God protects us and frees us from being duped by false promises that can never fulfill us. And finally, God woos our hearts in hiddenness. Yes, it is about spiritual courtship, spiritual espousal, spiritual marriage. These are terms that contemplative teachers like Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross do not shy away from. They really see this mystical union as God himself wooing us and courting us and espousing us and drawing us to intimacy and friendship. So there's a richness in this way in which the divine darkness really illumines us on every level.
Chapter 16, The Secret Wisdom of Dark Contemplation. You're right, we advance toward the divine. This is on page 254. We advance toward the divine, humanly speaking, not by way of what we know, but by way of what we do not know and cannot control. We enjoy the grace of this place of perfection, but we are ignorant as how we got there or why we have been so favored by the Lord. All of our knowing brings us face to face with the unknowable. And this was a chapter that caused me to stop and just reflect for a while. Silence is the space of divine transforming grace, and God exalts the humble and perfects in them his wonderful ways. So wherever you'd like to go.
I want to pick up on the phrase secret wisdom, because that's very different from intellectual knowing. Throughout the book, here and there, I do quote the great English author, the anonymous author of The Cloud of Unknowing. And in that famous book, which St. John may well have known, that was written in the 14th century, he's writing in the 16th century. The author says, "Thought knocks on this cloud of unknowing, but only love enters." And I think that's the wisdom that St. John wants to draw us toward. Through this purified love for God, a response to God's love for us, a brightening occurs. On page 255, I describe a commentary on what secret wisdom means. Just a few thoughts, like the lightning of God that brightens a world dark with sin, so divine contemplation illumines the farthest reaches of our soul and casts out the shadowy hold of self-consciousness. And then the way we must follow to go to God does not match the solidity of the earth, but the fluidity of the sea. God is a sea, says St. Catherine of Siena. To follow Christ means to step out into both calm and raging waters. It is to walk in footsteps we often do not see except with the eyes of faith. So there's wisdom here that just goes beyond, I might use the phrase, book learning. This is a wisdom that comes from the experience of meeting the Master and really having an intimate enough relationship that certain secrets can be disclosed to us that cannot be disclosed in any other way. And many of those secrets, many of the secrets are paradoxical.
But the beauty and power of it all is that you have translated it for us, a commentary. Yeah. Otherwise, I would not have understood it as much as I do with your commentary. And that's where the beauty and power all comes from. Certainly, it needs what we need to talk about in chapter 17, the mystical ladder of love, where you begin on page 260. St. John uses the image of the ladder of love with its 10 rungs to show us how a lover of God can reach the full maturity of spiritual intimacy only by ascending from lower to higher levels of faith, hope, and love. One's incentives are confidence, courage, and constancy. One's guide is the Holy Spirit. And on this particular chapter, I have asterisks to say, hey, this is really an important one.
Yes, and I'm glad that you brought up that point a little earlier, because why did I write this book? I wrote this book because the students in my early classes said to me, Dr. Muto, we need a translation of the translation. To just cold turkey go to The Ascent and Dark Night is very difficult. And I found that I had to respect that request and really line by line try to companion the text so that its richness could be appreciated by all kinds of readers and not just specialists, say, in the field of mystical theology. And this particular chapter 17, based on Dark Night Book 2, chapters 19 and 20, is utterly important because in it, St. John, it's like he's the guide, we are the pilgrim, and he takes us by the hand. And he says, look, there are steps that lead us to this mystical union with God. The first one is the longing for God, which we have said all along, one dark night, fired by love's urgent longings. Of course, if we don't long for God, then the whole process just peters out. And then the second step, searching for the beloved without ceasing, reminds us of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, pray without ceasing. This is not whimsical. It means that that's our life. We search for the beloved on this planet where we're inhaling the breath of earthly oxygen because we are not destined to be here forever. So we have to search for the beloved without ceasing, like our last breath here may be our first breath there in eternity. And then the test of whether we're really growing, which is so deeply gospel, filled with gospel counsel, is performing good works with fervor. Both St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa of Avila will tell us in so many words that the ultimately true test of contemplation is the charity that flows from it. It's not just going off to quiet places to contemplate. It's taking what is told to us for the sake of loving and serving others. And therefore, the willingness to pursue God with or without consolation. I mean, that's step four, because
hold on. We need to take a break. So when we come back, let's go to step four and then talk just a little bit further about the book and see how much we gain. So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Excellent.
Welcome back to Amplify. Our guest this evening is Dr. Susan Muto. We're talking about her book, John of the Cross for today, The Dark Nights. And we've been talking about the 17th chapter, which is titled The Mystical Ladder of Love, that she had described to some point. But then chapters 18, 19, and 20 are very important also. So I'm not quite sure how much we can get there because we go out. Program ends at 3 minutes before 11. So, Susan, when you continue talking about the steps?
I just want to name them for our listeners, and then this would be a great reason to read the book on their own. The fourth step, as we said, pursuing God with or without consolation. Step five, ascending higher with incessant hunger. Step six, running swiftly to God. Seven, moving upward with ardent boldness. Eight, holding on to the beloved. Nine, burning gently in God. And 10, seeing God clearly. I think these steps are a great summary of where we began, and that is the movement toward deeper union and communion with God. But I think it opens the path then to the final three chapters, 18, 19, and 20.
Right, and St. John tells us, you write, that at this height nothing is kept from us, and this is the 10th step on the ladder, because we are already being assimilated to the delights of the next life. Chapter 18 is Souls in Disguise, Escape from Alienation into the Embrace of Love Divine, and three virtues release us from all that is less than God and join us to God. And that's on pages 279 and 280.
Yes, St. John reveals what a creative writer he is because he uses colors to help us. He talks about the whiteness of faith and the greenness of hope, and he also talks about the redness of charity. But definitely these are the keys toward mystical union, and that's what's so fantastic about him as an ascetical mystical theologian. He does not go outside of the basic teachings of the church. He just brings them home to us in a remarkable way and ultimately lifts us to the liberation of resting in the love of God. And we give indicators of that on page 280. Here's the journey. We went from what was lowly or pre-transcendent to what was sublime and transcendent, thanks to grace. We went from being mere earthly creatures to becoming heavenly divinized people of God, thanks to grace. We went from being all too human to becoming conversant with the ways of heaven, thanks to grace. And indeed, it is the recognition of our cooperation with grace that we, again, can never take this journey alone, but that God is there to lead us every step of the way if we simply reach out and ask for help.
In chapter 19 is titled The Hidden Life, and you write, St. John reveals a secret worth telling. Due to the soul's concealment under the cover of darkness, the devil, as a rule, cannot find us. We are hidden from his seductions and deceits because our attention is focused solely on God. For this reason, we proceed more securely to where the beloved waits. There, in that place, we know so well we receive the graces of infused contemplation. No evil power can penetrate this secret place of encounter with the divine. There, God's grace comes to us as pure gift. Tell us how you develop this chapter just a little bit further.
Well, I wanted, again, not to underestimate the battle that St. John has courageously taken on, the battle in our heart, the good that I would do, the evil, the good that I would do, I don't do, and the evil that I'd rather not do, I do, from St. Paul. But he doesn't shirk the fact that we are in this battle between good and evil. And yes, the world, the flesh, the devil is very much active, certainly in our space of life today. But here, this idea of being hidden and being hidden in God is a safe place because the devil cannot enter there. where there is faith, where there is hope, where there is love, there is no room for evil. And so he wants us to appreciate the fact that this demonic attempt to destroy our relationship with God simply peters out because we have been drawn into an intimacy, a seeing into who we are and who God is. And the contemplative gifts are given to us by the infused graces of God. So really, he's talking about being freed to follow a life of simplicity and security, spontaneity, just a really proper life of discipleship.
Right, and you're right. While the devil can attack the edges of our consciousness, he cannot gain access to the inner abyss where the Holy abides in us and we in him. And then on page 286, you talk about the soul is a battlefield. In what sense is the soul a battlefield?
Well, I tried to bring up before like the old spiritual desert mothers and fathers of old. It's a battlefield between vice and virtue. It's a battlefield between what God asks me to do and how my own ego, again, my pride form, can wedge Christ out of the picture. And so this battlefield is something that Jesus, I think, understood. That's why he said, arm yourself with the armor of a good character. Maintain a moral fiber, because the prince of lies prowls around looking for whom he may devour. This is why, interestingly enough, I think a book written a few years back is more important today than probably when I wrote it. I could not have realized when I wrote this book that we would be in this battlefield everywhere today. Mm-hmm. I mean, from wanting to control our own bodies as if we can nip and tuck them in any way we wish, to really thinking that we're the boss and we don't need God. So I think we all understand the battle that is being fought, but it's we are armed so profoundly by the cross of Jesus that we need not be afraid, but we can't be naive.
Yeah, you're right. The devil's aim is to use his spiritual powers to destroy a spiritual person. And you write on page 288 that suffering is the way to wisdom when it frees us to walk in the truth and to make the world a better place. Amplify on that a little bit.
Well, Teresa of Avila again, and of course the two of those beautiful souls were in intense dialogue. She says, humility is to walk in the truth of who we are. What we suffer most from is the put down of our own illusion of prideful self-sufficiency. And therefore, when that illusion disappears, we're on the way to wisdom. We can walk humbly in the truth of who we are. And therefore, again, the test of our contemplation can show up in our care and compassion for other people. So that the contemplative life is never seen as just for an elite few on mountaintops. It's understood as a life that enhances our love, and the enhancement of love, as nothing else, drives the devil crazy, if we can put it that way. The devil wants us to hate. The devil wants us to be at one another's throats, but the infused contemplative mystical life exercises mercy and compassion and gives us a chance to really be companions in the Lord.
Just want to note that you point out that divine visitations mediated by the angels, and I have such great devotion to the angels, are like lights,
yes,
that guide our walk through the darkness. But then on page 290, you write, the truth St. John has been trying to convey throughout his treatise is from beginning to the end paradoxical. We can only reach this place of utmost clarity in the darkness of not knowing. We can only attain this delight of revelation in concealment. We can gain strength only in union with God, in hiddenness. We can escape the hatred that would destroy us only through love. Any final words on this chapter?
Well, simply to say what I have tried to communicate in many of my classes, that unless we are comfortable with paradoxical reality, we cannot read
the literature of spirituality. The literature of spirituality is filled with just these kinds of paradoxes, that in the darkness, in the light, is the light. In the hiddenness is where we are found. So I wanted to just emphasize that one of the great arts of formative spiritual reading is being comfortable with a paradoxical reality. We started that at the beginning of our reflections, that dark night becomes a glad night because it is the night that unites the lover and the beloved.
In the final chapter, titled The Solitary Bird, you write that St. John wants to show how war gives way to peace, agitation to rest. For divine union to become a possibility, both parts of the soul, lower and higher, have to be reformed in the dark night. Translate that a little bit for us. The soul's lower and higher.
Well, the lower refers to just the sheer reasoning process, like exercises in logic. But we can that can take us so far. I mean, it's like robotic logical intelligence can only take us so far. The higher part of the soul, the higher reason brings us into the notion of the two wings of truth, reason. But reason brings us to faith. And though faith is mysterious, and that though faith cannot be something that we give ourselves, it is a gift. It's distinctively human. It brings us into a more transcendent awareness of who I most truly am. So the lower reason, the higher reason, all of that is taken into account by St. John of the Cross. But mere logic, positivistic thinking, cannot take us into the realms where he's taken us through the gift of faith.
And you have a summary on pages 292 to 293. Here is a summary of what has transpired. So summarize that for us, if you would.
Well, I think that we've tried to summarize it in saying that, look, we've arrived at a more perfect house. We're at, our soul is at rest, thanks to, it's like Mary resting at the feet of Jesus, so that the Martha in us has the energy to go forward with doing good deeds, that our spirit has been freed through very substantial touches of divine union, that we are much more hidden from diabolical disturbance, and that therefore the soul comes to a deep sense of resting in the Lord, gaining and renewed strength, finding stability in the midst of change. These are all signs and a summary of what has transpired. The final one is, one is now in a position, indeed a permanent disposition of form receptivity, that we receive, that is to say, we receive permanently this divine union, this divine espousal, this spiritual communion, this consuming love between the soul and God. So Journey's End is really the union, as Teresa of Avila even says at the end of her great treatise, The Interior Castle, that the Mary in us and the Martha in us have finally come into harmony.
And you write about tying the knot of love. What is that a description of?
Well, I think that's a description of what it means to be committed for a lifetime to Jesus. You know, when a person's put on a wedding ring, that means that they are committed. And this journey through the dark night really draws us to a deeper commitment. We want to tie that knot of love in a permanent way. This is nothing whimsical. And I often said to the students, this kind of spiritual reading is not for wimps. This is something that is really deep and profound, and it leads us to a new level of commitment in love to the Lord.
And then one of the final parts of the chapter is on a glad night. And you explain on page 295, you have three main points talking about how St. John begins to explain why it is so that the night of the Spirit is ultimately not sad, but glad. By dwelling on this metaphor, he hopes to enumerate its good properties and why it leads to so lofty a goal as union with God.
Yes, this is the stanza again. Don't forget, I cannot underestimate the power of this poetry, which came out of his own prison experience. He composed this poetry in his mind and wrote it down when he escaped that prison after 9 months. And there again, that paradoxical refrain, on that glad night in secret, for no one saw me, nor did I look at anything, with no other light or guide than the one that burned in my heart. That light and guide that burns in our heart is the presence of Jesus in us. We don't have to confine Jesus to being out there in the cosmos somewhere. Our Lord is in us, and therefore he takes the lead. He guides us to these secret places of knowledge and wisdom that have everything to do with the union of love. He helps us to focus our journey, that we have a goal, that goal ultimately being the beatific vision, but we taste a little bit of that blessing here, and therefore the heart that is restless finally comes, as Augustine says so beautifully, to rest in God. And I think it's this notion of homecoming. That's why I finish the book, the end of chapter 20, with the sense of homecoming. We've been on a journey, and it's taken us to many places we could never have grasped without the help of St. John of the Cross. But basically, it's a homecoming to Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You might say a homecoming to the Trinity. And then I say toward the end of the book, whatever holds us down, a thin thread or a heavy chain, has to go. The less heed we pay to these things, the more we treat them as if they do not exist, the higher we will fly, the solitary bird. Slowly and gradually, we will be able to reorder our priorities. The rise upward may seem interminably slow, but if we are faithful, grace will help us to soar higher and higher on eagle's wings. Transitory demands at times do hold us down. We have no choice but to attend to them. Still, we must rest secure in the knowledge that the eternal now of God's all-embracing love will sustain us at every turn of the road. We shall rise and not grow weary. We shall fly until we are free.
And you write, love alone is our guide. Or since the darkness is dense, love alone is our guide. It is this kind of love, passionate, courageous, intense, that attracts the heart of the beloved. And the love, you have a quote here, the quote, love that moves the sun and the other stars, close quote, to quote the poet Dante, makes the soul soar like a solitary bird in free flight. It's a very powerful image. Our guest this evening has been Dr. Susan Muto. We've been talking about her book, St. John of the Cross, for today, The Dark Night. Susan, thank you so very much for being with us.
Most welcome, and till we meet again.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
And so we've come to the end of the program, and I'd like to read just a little bit more from the very end of the book. She started quoting a little bit herself, where she writes, if we have learned anything from St. John, it is this: daily we must attempt to detach ourselves from whatever hinders our homecoming to God. Only as God gives us the grace to soar above transitory things will this good intent succeed. We must not despair or give up when we find ourselves falling backwards or not soaring as high as we know we could, had we the courage to follow the lead of grace. We must continue to do the best we can, not pushing against the pace of grace, but flowing with the energy God gives us to make that ascent. By ourselves, we would never reach the goal we have set, but God will draw us as far as He wants us to go. All we can do is try to fly as high as we are able. Whatever holds us down, a thin thread of a heavy chain, as she said, has to go. The less heed we pay to these things, the more we treat them as if they do not exist, the higher we will fly. It's all from St. John of the Cross for today, the dark night. Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone else you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.